This is Rabbi Nassan Elbron, Congregation Brothers of Israel, Long Branch, New Jersey, recording for Wednesday, November 15th, 2017. We'll learn the 8th Mishnah, 8th Perek of Mishnah Ksuvos, and the first three Mishnayos in the 9th chapter. So we learned yesterday that when a husband dies and there are no children, right, there is a brother who is waiting to perform the levirate marriage, and so now you have the woman who is the Yavama and the man who is the Yavam. If the deceased husband leaves his brother an inheritance, all of that money is set aside as collateral for the woman's ksuva, and the husband is not allowed to freely spend it, the second, again, the brother. And therefore, today's Mishnah says, Lo yomar la, harei ksuvtzich munachas ala shulchan. He can't say, right, the Yavam, say to his ex-sister-in-law, the Yavama is now marrying leveretly, if that's, can actually conjugate it that way. Right, here is your cash, it's on the table. And then the husband, right, takes the rest of the inheritance and spends it. The Mishnah says, you cannot do that. Elakol nechasav achrayin leksuva. All of the money that the brother inherited from his deceased brother is set aside as collateral for this woman's ksuva, and therefore the husband has limited access to it. V'chein lo yomar adam le'ishto, a person shouldn't say to his wife, harei ksuv seich munachas al ha-shulchan, here's some cash for a ksuva payment, and that's all you, that's, you know, all you can collect from. Doesn't work either. Elakol nechasav achrayin leksuva, all of a husband's property is seen as collateral for the wife's ksuva. Now, the husband's allowed to sell his stuff. He's allowed to, you know, he doesn't have to all leave it in the house. There is a difference between the Yavam, in this case, inheriting, and the husband who, you know, has property. The husband can sell his property, can buy property. But at the end of the day, if there's nothing left for the woman's ksuva, they can go to the purchaser and retrieve the property because everything is actually seen as collateral for the wife's ksuva. Gersha. But let's say the brother, he, right, takes care of his sister-in-law, they perform the levirate marriage, and then it doesn't work out, and they get divorced. So then, ein la ela ksuvasa. Then she has her, right, she gets her ksuva, but that's it, because they were, you know, married. Once they're married and she gets her ksuva, so then the rest of the inheritance the man got from his brother is his to do what he wants with it. Once the ksuva is already paid out, everything else, right, the hold on everything else gets released. Hechzira. This is a really strange case, right? There's a levirate marriage, divorce from levirate marriage, and then they get remarried. So, harehi kechol hanashim ve'en la ela ksuvasa bavad. Right? If they get remarried in that case, it's like a regular, you know, woman who gets married, and she only gets her ksuva. She's by getting married and divorced and getting that first ksuva, she has lost her rights to that initial inheritance. Mishnah Aleph in Perek Tet. Okay, so now we're out of the Yibum category and back to stipulations one might make when they get married. So Hakosev Leishto, right? This man writes to his wife, Dinu Dvarim Ein Li Binich Saich. I have no, right, nothing to do. I'm not allowed to deal with your property. That general statement. The question is, what exactly does he mean? So the Mishnah thinks he doesn't mean all that much by it. Hareza ochal peros bechayeha. He is still allowed to eat the fruits of that property. Vi mesa, and if she dies, Yorsha, he inherits her. Right? Which seems like he actually has a lot to do with her property. Therefore, the Mishnah asks, in Cain, if that's the case, that he gets to eat from the fruit, and he gets to, you know, inherits if she dies, lama kasadla, dinu dvar, mainly benechsaich. I mean, what was the point of writing that if he didn't mean anything by it? So the Mishnah says he did mean one thing. She'imachra v'nasna kayim. He was basically, that line is giving her, I mean, when I don't have business dealings with your property, is an allowance that if she wants to sell it, she can go ahead and sell it and the sale will be valid. What if he writes a little more specifically, chasav la dinu dvarim en li b'nechsayichu b'feiro sehen. I don't have anything to do with your property when we get married and it their fruit. So then, Hareza in ocha peros bechayeha. He specifically said, I don't get the fruit, so he's not allowed to eat from the fruits of the land. Ve'im mesa, but if she dies, Yorsha. He still inherits her because, right, so far all he said is, you can sell it. I won't eat from the fruits, but nothing about the inheritance. Not only that, Rabbi Huda Omer la'olam ochal peiros. Right, you can have almost what we call secondary peiros, fruits of fruits. So that if you took the fruits and then you bought land and then there was fruits, the husband could enjoy that. Ad sheyichtov la di, unless the husband were to write very specifically, dinu dvarim ein li binechsayich ube peiros sehen. I don't have anything to do with your property. You can sell it. Ube peiros sehen and the fruits I won't eat. Ube peire peiros sehen ad olam. Right, whatever comes of that fruit forever, if that's what you write, then you can, right, then you don't have any restrictions on the wife selling the property. You can't eat from the fruits, nor can you eat from any of the proceeds from those fruits forever, because that is exactly what you said. And if you're more specific and you write, Chasavla, dinu dvarim ein li b'nechsayich, I have no business with your property, which means you can sell it. Ube perosem, I want the fruit. Ube peire feiro sehem, and the fruits of the fruits, secondary fruits. Bechayich uve moseich, when you're alive, and if you happen to predecease me, then eino ochal peiros bechayeh, you don't eat the fruits when she is alive. Ve'im mesa eino yorshan, you've given up your rights to the inheritance as well, because you specifically did. Shimon Liel Omer, hold on one sec. Everything so far was good, but Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, "Imesa, if she dies, Yirashena, then he actually does inherit." Mipnei shehisna mashakasuv b'Torah, because he made a condition about that which is written in the Torah. Everything else, the property, those are all rabbinic things. Okay, so you're allowed to make your conditions, but laws of inheritance that the husband inherits his wife is a Torah command. You're not allowed to make a condition against the Torah command. That's what the Mishnah said. Anyone who makes the condition against that which is explicitly written in the Torah, that condition is null and void. It just does not. It's a big fat zero. Okay. Mishnah Bet. Right? Another. This is also a very fascinating Mishnah. I'll tell you why in a moment. Right, so a person dies. Now he has a woman who, right, deserves her ksuva. He has a baal chov. He has creditors, people that he owes money to. And there are yorshim. There are people who are going to inherit him. So there are, right, three different people coming after this deceased person's money. And it happens to be, says the Mishnah, v'hayala pikadon o'mil v'biyad acherim. Right. Not only does he owe people money, but people owe him money, or so there's some collateral that somebody else is holding that is indeed belongs to him. So now, who the money that is owed to this deceased person or the collateral, who gets it? The wife, the debtors, sorry, the creditors, or the yorshim, right, the heirs. So Rabbi Tarfon Omer yinasnu lakoshel shabahen. Rabbi Tarfon says, give it to the weakest person, right? The poorest person, maybe the one who can't fend for themselves. Have some rachmanis. We have three people who want it. And therefore, you know, make sure that you give it to the right person. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Akiva says, no, that sounds nice. Ein merachamin badin. Right? Din is din. Justice is justice. You cannot pervert justice to be merciful. There's plenty of time for tzedakah and for mercy. But the weakest person is not how you determine who gets the money. Ela yinasnu liyorshim. You have to give it to the yorshim. You have to give it to the inheritors, the heirs. Shekulan tzrichan shvua v'en ayorshin tzrichan shvua. In order to collect, right, from the deceased, the woman or the creditors, the baal chov, would have to swear. The yorshim, the inheritors, do not have to swear. And therefore, they are the ones who have the right to it. So even if they are the wealthiest, unfortunately, right, maybe afterwards you work something out, but in Beit Din, the din has to be right. That's an interesting, right? Interesting. And Rabbi Tarfon obviously thinks not. Right? Rabbi Tarfon thinks that maybe the shvu is not as strong, and therefore give it to the weakest person. Right? Is there a place for mercy in injustice is a fascinating question. Mishnah Gimel, last Mishnah for today. Hiniach peros tlushim in hakarka. Right, let's say the same case. So the person leaves fruit that is on the ground. So the Mishnah says, "Kol akodem zachabahen." All right, the first person who gets it takes it. Finished. Zachsa isha yoser miksuvasa balchov yoser alchovo. Right, what happens if the woman grabs more fruit than she deserves for her, you know, the ksuba? The ksuba is X amount of dollars and she has X plus 10 from collecting the fruit. And the balchov, the creditor who owes, you know, who was owed the money, so he's owed $100, he has $120 in fruit. So Hamota, what do you do with the leftover, that leftover money that's beyond what they are owed? So Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Yinas de la Koshel Bahen. Again, Rabbi Tarfon says, give it to the weakest. And Rabbi Akiva, again, it's the same argument. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Emirachmin Badin, there is no place for mercy in justice. Eli Yinas de la Yoshim, have to give it to the inheritors. Shekulan Srichen Shvua, Ve'en Hayorshin Srichen Shvua. Right, in order to collect, everyone has to take an oath. The inheritors do not, and therefore, they get it first.